We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast, coming to you live on a Saturday morning with a quad box. We are a few days away from free agency, so we decided to bring in the big guns today, the two Alexes. It was also Alex Insdorf's birthday this week, so Alex, happy birthday. Hopefully you had a great time celebrating down there in a foreign country, but how are you doing today, man?
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's sad to announce that my dreams of being a day three running back probably are not coming to fruition. And I'm probably as washed as Blake Corum, unfortunately. So, but I'm happy to be on the show and we'll talk a lot about the running back position today.
Yeah. Excited to get some thoughts here about free agency from all the guys here. Alex Katzen as well is joining us fresh off his week at the combine, where he absolutely crushed it, and it was your first combine. So, Alex, how was the trip, man?
Yeah, it was great. I'm exhausted still, like a week after getting back. It's a long week in Indianapolis, but it was a lot of fun. Heard a lot of great stuff. Met a lot of great people. You know, got to experience everything that Indianapolis had to offer. Had a really great time. Excited to be back home, and excited for free agency to get started.
It was really funny listening to all the podcasts and like throughout the week, they got progressively like less enthusiastic and less energy, and, you know, the voice is gone. So it was a good time. I think you successfully maneuvered your way through the whole week, and we appreciated your coverage for sure. All right. Tyler's here as well, man. Tyler, what's up? How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Let's start this show.
All right, so we are going to take questions. This is specifically geared towards free agency, but, you know, with Alex Katzen here, you know, our draft expert, if you have some draft questions, you can fire away there as well. Super chats will obviously ensure that your question gets answered, but obviously not necessary, but greatly appreciated. To get the ball rolling, this morning, we're going to each be giving our three favorite free agent targets. So there's no real criteria here. Tyler and I did a show of like the options at $10 million or less. If one of you guys wants to really advocate for, you know, an expensive corner or something like that, I totally get it. So no real criteria, three favorite free agents, just it can be any position, anything like that. Alex Katzen, why don't you kick us off there?
Yeah, I'm going to start with a fellow UW Husky, and that's Will Disley from the Seahawks, tight end. Just got cut earlier this week, which means he doesn't factor into the compensatory pick formula, which is going to be a huge thing for Joe Ortiz. Obviously, he's a great run blocker. All the tight ends up in Seattle are great run blockers. And so, you know, any of the three of them that are free agents this season are going to be great options. But Disley's the best bet for my money, just because again of the compensatory pick formula thing. I also think Arthur Mollett from the Ravens, the corner from the Ravens, he's going to be more of a slot guy, but he has familiarity with Jesse Minter's defense. The defense that the Ravens ran last season with Mike McDonald is similar, but not exactly the same as the defense that the Chargers are going to run next season. Obviously has the familiarity with Ortiz coming from the Ravens as well. And then the last one is Brian Allen, the center from the Rams, who got cut a couple weeks ago. Lost his starting job to Coleman Shelton, who's going to be a pending free agent as well, but the Rams are going to try to bring him back. He's probably going to be out of the Chargers price range. Allen is someone that you can probably bring in as like a veteran who's going to quote unquote compete for the starting job with a potential rookie pick. Probably ends up starting for a few weeks, if not the whole season next year, but can be probably had for cheap because he hasn't started since 2022, but still has a little bit left in the tank. I think he's only 28. 28. So those are my three.
Yeah, good selection there of players who were formerly cut. Just to clarify that, because I know there's been some confusion about compensatory picks. So it's about, you know, money going out versus money coming in. Players who are cut from their previous teams, as Daniel Popper referred to them today, are street free agents. Those players do not count against the compensatory pick formula. So for Joe Ortiz, if he really wants to make sure he gets a compensatory pick for Austin Ekeler, Gerald Everett, Alohi Gilman apparently has a big market. So if he wants to let those guys walk and ensure that they get some compensatory picks, the players who were currently released from their teams, those are kind of the players that you're looking at there. Tyler, your thoughts on Alex's three, and then why don't you give your top three?
Yeah, really like them. As he mentioned, the tight ends from Seattle are all great and all good blockers and all good parts of really good scheme. So totally on board with that overall. Did not consider Mollett before. I think we had talked about corners, but it's more like Rock Ya-Sin and some of the other DBs from the Ravens. So good call there for sure. My three, I guess I'll steal them because I think Steven already talked about them on the Chargers channel. So I'll just kind of revert back to some of these. Colby Parkinson, of course, I have to mention him because it's been a three-year thing for me. It's almost Hassan Reddick or Cordarrelle Patterson for us.
Yeah,
we're asking for it. We got a shot. Colby Parkinson there. A lot of NFL teams are really making it clear that this tight end class isn't great. Some guys are being brought back very early. There are new deals for, I think, three or four tight ends now being brought back before the market hits because it's not a great tight end class. And if you believe the Chargers are taking a tight end at five, that's it for the rest of the way, basically. I like Theo Johnson, but it's just different. So Colby Parkinson, get a tight end early. Walk into the draft happy. I'll go with Tyrie Tart. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but formerly of the Titans. Not a rusher, and that's totally fine. Nose tackle, zero, one tech kind of guy who's going to plug the run. It costs $7 million APY for a three-year deal, according to Pro Football Focus's free agent rankings. So I'd go with him. And I'm still going to ride the Derrick Henry train, guys. Like, it's so unlike me to go with that direction. He's now projected $1 million less, by the way. So, hey, we're buying low here. It was $10 million. Now it's $9 million. I'm buying it. I really just feel like in any other system, different time, different coach, different coordinator, I don't think you're really looking at Derrick Henry. And frankly, maybe they aren't looking at Derrick Henry. But I just feel like with this particular Harbaugh-Roman sort of deal, raise the floor of your offense, spend a little bit of money on a running back, which I usually don't advocate for. But I think Derrick Henry in this case is worth it. And heck, as Steven has pointed out many times, I'd rather prioritize Derrick Henry over some of the other guys who are in like that $12, $13 million range.
Yeah, we talked about Derrick Henry on the show. If they are looking in the expensive running back category, I think that's my choice as well. Alex Insdorf, your thoughts on the six players mentioned thus far, and who would your three be?
Yeah, I'm still pretty against spending money on a running back, but if there were to be one that I would spend money on, I think it would be Derrick Henry and just bringing him in, and he's an immediate downhill running game fit and has, you know, as people have said, like really defied all age norms, right? So normally you'd be like, you know, it's a running back over 30, but still forced a bunch of missed tackles last year, 1,200 yards, and is still an absolute freak show of a back. So if they wanted to go in that direction, although I would have my moral and ethical objections, I would understand why they would do that as opposed to other big name, big money running backs that they might go after.
Yeah.
So my three guys, much cheaper running back. And as Katzen started with the UW Husky, I will start with a Rutgers Scarlet Knight in Gus Edwards. I think it makes way too much sense. I mean, not only does he have familiarity with Ortiz, but also very familiar with Greg Roman and being used in that system as well. Probably doesn't cost you more than the $3.75 million PFF has projected for him. And it doesn't preclude you from drafting another running back or even doubling down at running back in free agency if you wanted to go get another guy, say, be it a Zach Moss or whomever. I think that that is probably the smarter way to build your running back room than going after one of the big money running backs in free agency. For linebacker, I went with Zach Cunningham of the Eagles. I think he's going to be pretty cheap. Fits kind of the Minter scheme pretty well. Decent coverage linebacker. And frankly, they just need a body at linebacker right now. You know, after cutting Eric Kendricks, I expect that position to be overhauled, you know, with free agency and the draft. So for me, I got to go with Cunningham there. Will become pretty cheap as well. And then my last one will be Lloyd Cushenberry of Denver. I think that they need to get a starting center here, whether it's him or Graham Glasgow, just because I think it would be tough to go into the draft and kind of handicap you if you force yourself to pick a center in the first four rounds. So having somebody who is at least starting caliber, even if on a shorter term deal, I think makes a lot of sense for the Chargers in this market. So I'd go with him. And then one last one I'll mention, I know I'm going on four. I'll go with CJ Gardner-Johnson. If in the event that they do let Alohi Gilman walk, which keeping Alohi Gilman is still my preference. You know, he's still 26, a year removed from his best season with the Eagles formerly, suffered a torn pec last year with the Lions, unfortunately, before coming back to the playoffs. I think that he and Derwin would make a pretty good strong safety, free safety duo there.
Yeah, I think that's a good one for sure. Tyler stole mine. Obviously, we've talked about Colby Parkinson a lot, but the other tight end I'm interested in is Adam Trautman. He's still younger on his existing contract, and you know he's probably a little more affordable than Parkinson, but I think he's, you know, not as good of a blocker or a receiver, but he would be one for me. And then I'm interested in cornerback, and you know, maybe kind of a, you know, competent starter type, not necessarily like, you know, you're going to change the franchise here by any means, but Dane Jackson would be a cornerback I'd be interested in, formerly of the Buffalo Bills. He was actually tied with Marlon Humphrey and Greg Newsome this past season in terms of forced incompletion percentage at 19. He's played in the slot. He's played outside. Somebody who could at minimum compete with Asante Samuel Jr. on the outside, you know, gives you some CB4, maybe CB2 kind of insurance, just a reliable, steady veteran that I think would make sense for them as well. I wanted to pick an offensive lineman. I think Graham Glasgow makes a ton of sense for them, but I don't think he's like one of my favorites. So I am going to go full caricature of myself and bring up Zach Moss again. One of the most efficient per play running backs last season. In terms of yards after contact and missed tackles forced, that's always been in his bag. That's why he was drafted. That's why people liked him at coming out of the University of Utah. It's just the injury thing. So that's why he's not necessarily hit so far. I hated his fit in the Buffalo Bills, but the Colts, you know, really used him very well. There was one point in the season where he was like the leading rusher in the NFL. And again, just kind of stabilizing the position in a cost effective manner, I think would make sense in the same way as Gus Edwards would. So, all right, there's 12, 13 free agents that we all like. Guys, any other thoughts there before we start jumping into these questions?
Nope, let's get into them. Send in your questions, at least from my end.
This was an interesting one here. Anthony Hopper, I tweeted about Jeff Okuda yesterday. Definitely not somebody that you are paying a lot, but Mr. Alex Katzen, what would you think about a Jeff Okuda flyer for the Chargers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth considering, especially because it's probably not going to cost that much. Again, you're getting a guy who's going to play outside corner, kind of push Asante Samuel. They don't really have a like defined CB2 on the roster. We're kind of assuming that that's going to be a draft pick. And so I think that it makes sense from a schematic standpoint. Okuda's best used as like kind of a more of a man corner, you know, not going to be like a super zone heavy guy. Kind of fits what the Chargers are going to be doing with Minter. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of disguise and stuff. And so like you kind of want someone who's able to do both. But it's free agency, especially if you're not going to be spending a lot of money. You're not going to get all around players a lot of the time. And so I think Okuda is worth taking a shot on. You know, I think that the coaching in Detroit was not super well tailored to him.
understatement, I think.
Yeah. And then obviously, like in Atlanta, I'm really high on Ryan Nielsen as a defensive coordinator. But the kind of infrastructure just around that team this season and you know, the whole time that he was there has just like not been super beneficial. So I'd be more than willing to take a shot on him for sure.
Yeah, as would I. I'm trying to look up his recruiting profile right now to see if Michigan.
Oh, I'm sure he was recruited by Michigan.
I mean, he was recruited by everybody, I feel like, but I'm just curious if he ever got an offer or anything.
It's a real bummer that his career has not worked out. He's one of my top four grades at corner I've ever given out, and just landed in the worst possible situation for him.
Yeah, I think he's still only like what, 25, something like that.
I think he is about to turn 26, but yeah, he's still young.
Yeah, no, still young, and certainly for the money, wouldn't mind taking a shot on him.
Notre Dame did offer him though. Is Klinscale from that time? Maybe Minter. I don't know. No, that was early for Minter.
Well, it's the
just turned 25 in February, wow. So he's okay. Young.
Interesting. Alex, let's discuss Josh Jacobs. I want you specifically because your moral and ethical Alex Insdorf, that is, I'm talking about your moral and ethical objections. Why don't you make an argument for signing Josh Jacobs?
He led the league in rushing yards in 2022. I think there's an argument that Josh McDaniels' system and also the constant mess at Raiders quarterback last year kind of made Jacobs' numbers and production worse than it probably was. So, you know, I think there's an argument that you have Herbert and you're rebuilding this offensive line, that Jacobs has the opportunity to be better next year if I'm playing devil's advocate with myself. I think you can make the case for it. But again, if I'm not there with Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley, I'm just kind of not there with spending that on Josh Jacobs. I get why they would do it, though, because it is an immediate upgrade over, you know, Eckler and kind of what they had last year. I'm just not sure that juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah. Alex Katzen, do you have any thoughts on Josh Jacobs?
I would prepare for it to happen. that's my thing about Josh Jacobs. While I was at the combine, I had two different people tell me that the Chargers are huge fans of his, and that they would expect Jacobs to be a Charger once free agency opens. Obviously, that's going to cost a lot of money. I personally would not allocate my resources like that, but evidently, like Jim Harbaugh is a huge fan of his. He has fans in the front office. I would, as much as it pains probably most people that don't want to spend big money on a running back, I would prepare for Jacobs to be in powder blue this fall.
That's still so wild at this point. I think, man, I don't know. I get it because I just advocated for Derrick Henry, so I can't say like, oh, why that wouldn't make any sense. He is higher on the Derrick Henry on rushing yards that were expected per attempt, so at least there's that. But I could see it. I do feel like this offense, this team is going to lean a bigger name at running back. Obviously, Katzen hurt Jacobs, so we can lean Jacobs. Preference is Henry, but I would get it. But I don't know, man. We'll see what that price tag ends up being.
I think the thing for me is, you know, once we figure out what exactly they're going to do with Bosa, Mack, Williams, and maybe an extension of Allen, right? You probably are around like 25 to 30 million, maybe in terms of like money they'll have to spend. And I just think, you know, yes, they can sign him to a 3-year, $33 million deal as PFF has him currently projected for. But I just think that at this rate, that's, you know, a little bit tough to swallow with $18 million guaranteed. But also, I just think in terms of the financial flexibility they'll have, you know, if you're going to spend you know, let's say 7 to 8 million of that cap hit on Jacobs of the 25 or 30 you have to spend with the amount of holes they have on defense. I just think there are better uses of your resources.
Yeah, I think the resources are tough. Maybe the depressed market at running back maybe brings that number down a bit here. But I guess, you know, if you're getting the 2022 version, which at this point is the outlier of his career, you know, if you look at his career arc, it's been kind of, if you remove 2022, you kind of are underwhelmed at the 4 years that the Raiders have gotten from him. But if you look at 2022, he led the league in missed tackles forced that season. Obviously, Alex mentioned total rushing yards, but he had 90 missed tackles forced in 2022. In terms of yards after contact per attempt, he was 11th in the league of those qualified at 3.40. Explosive run plays in terms of 10-plus yards, he was second, only trailing Nick Chubb with 41. So if you're confident that, like, hey, the 2023 Raiders offensive line was bad, the quarterback situation was less than ideal, you know, the play calling stuff with Josh McDaniels was not very good. If you view 2023 as an outlier and you view 2022 as the norm, then you're probably pretty fired up. And I can see why there would be fans of Josh Jacobs out there. I think we all kind of agree that, you know, with where the Chargers resources are at, it's just that's for me that I think you can make a real case for Josh Jacobs getting back to 2022 form in this kind of offense with Justin Herbert, with a better offensive line, with Greg Roman. It's just the money thing for me would have to be right. I don't want to say live with, because that's maybe a little bit harsh, but I think if you do like a 3-year deal, low cap hit in year one and out after the second year, I could stomach it. I could live with it. I still would prefer Derrick Henry of the expensive running backs, but I think you can maybe get some more flexibility out of a 3-year deal. And I think that's probably my preference of how you would go about signing him.
Austin Eckler, explosive plays over 10 yards in 2023, 7. Josh Jacobs, explosive plays over 10 yards in 2023, 9.
Yeah. 2023 was bad. It was not very good. So you're if this happens, and I know Alex Gadsden is pretty confident that it does, you are praying that you're getting 2022 Josh Jacobs and not 2023.
Do you think signing a more expensive free agent running back means or indicates that they're going to lean into this identity with the 5th pick or 8th or 11th pick if they trade back and go with a tackle or Bowers or a guard and switch Zion to center or something? Or do you think they go with the opposite and say, okay, we got our running back, now let's go get a Malik Nabers and kind of do something different on offense?
Katzen, you want to take that one first?
Sure. I think that if they do that, it probably means that they are going to lean into it. I think that it probably means that, like, they're going to focus on an offensive lineman or defense even with either that 5th pick or if they trade down or, you know, whatever it is. I think that, like, they want to establish this identity very quickly. And, you know, it's kind of a monkey's paw thing for Chargers fans, right? Where it's like, you know, it kind of feels like the team has lacked an identity, you know, this entire time with the Brandon Staley tenure and everything. And now it's like, okay, all we want is like an identity as a football team. And now it's like, okay, here is one. And people are like, no, not like that. Not like that. No. Yeah. And so I do think that it probably means that they will lean into it with that first round pick, if not like, you know, early in the draft at least. But obviously still a long ways to go. And we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, I think Daniel Jeremiah gave a scenario on his Move the Sticks podcast where the Chargers trade down to, you know, 11, 12, 13, whatever. And, you know, a lot of people have been kind of linking them to a specific right tackle, which I would understand to a certain extent in a trade down. But he was saying that his ideal scenario for them would be to trade down. You take Troy Fautanu from Washington and he plays right guard for you as a rookie and then right tackle after that going forward. So Alex, as obviously the UW resident here, what are your thoughts about Fautanu playing guard and not tackle after kind of everybody kind of projected him as a guard? And then it was like, oh, he has 34 inch arms, so he's a tackle. And now it's kind of going back to he should be a guard right away. What are your thoughts there regarding Fautanu and his fit to the Chargers?
Yeah, I think that he's a great fit for any team, really. I mean, he can play guard or tackle. I talked to him at the combine, and he said that he's met with 28 teams, and one of the four teams that he hadn't formally met with was the Eagles, which means that there's a pretty good statistical chance that he met with the Chargers. just like, there's only three teams out of the other 31 that he didn't meet with, and so like, just doing the math there, like, he probably met with the Chargers. But he also said that in all 28 of those meetings, the teams asked him about playing guard. And so it seems like that is going to be at least something that the team that drafts him explores, even if they stick him at tackle to start. Obviously with the Chargers, he's going to have to play guard immediately, unless you think he's going to beat out Trey Pipkins and he's going to be a swing tackle for $9 million or whatever it is, which doesn't seem like the best allocation of resources again. But I think that the plan of playing him at right guard, at least getting him acquainted with like the footwork on the right side, because he really only played left tackle at Washington. And so moving him to right guard, at least getting him acquainted with like the, you know, the speed of everything and like mirroring that foot, footwork over to the right side. And then next year, if Pipkins doesn't kind of take a step back forward out of this kind of like regression that he had last season, then it's a lot easier to get out of that contract. You can slide Troy over to right tackle and then like look at a guard in next year's draft class or next year's free agency or whatever it may be. And so I think that that's a reasonable plan. I think that that's much more reasonable to do with someone like Fatanu than someone like Joe Alt, who's 6 foot nine. so I think if that's the route that they want to go, Fatanu makes a lot of sense. Tylisi Fuaga makes a lot of sense. Guys like that, that are kind of going to be more available in like the 11 to 15 range, make a lot more sense to do that with.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. All right. Back to free agency here a bit. Ellie Bruin, what does the tender mean for Dicker? No team can match the contract or anything like that. I'm still a little, confused on like the ERFA tag and what that means for him long term. Alex Katzen was the one to break the news courtesy of Over the Cap, so we can certainly talk about this. But from a financial standpoint, why wouldn't you just like give him an extended contract? I know he was an undrafted free agent and all that, but I'm still kind of confused about the ERFA versus RFA versus UFA stuff. So anybody you want to clarify that, feel free, or you can just talk about how good Cameron Dicker is. I don't know.
Cameron Dicker's great.
Yeah, so I guess I can take this one again, not to take over the episode or anything, but you know, so basically ERFA means like it's typically for undrafted free agents that sign with a team. And basically what it means is that no other team is allowed to negotiate with that player unless you specifically do not tender them. You can sign them to an extension, but there's really no reason to, because if you pick up the exclusive rights free agency tender, the player is not an unrestricted free agent next season. They're a restricted free agent next season. So Cameron Dicker is going to cost $985,000 against the cap next season. He's going to be a restricted free agent, which means they can just tender him again next season. And so while yes, he is probably deserving of a long-term extension and like the number on Over the Cap that says he's only under contract for 1 year probably gives people a little bit of anxiety, because it's like, well, why won't we just lock him up long-term? It's a cost thing of like, why would you pay him $2.5 million or whatever for like a top of market kicker extension when you could pay him $985,000? He may not even count as like a top 51 cap hit by the time things are all said and done, you know, on the 90-man roster. And again, he's going to be a restricted free agent next season. And so like, I had a couple people that were like, oh, you know, this is great. Like, we'll lock him up long-term next season. I don't even think so. I think they're going to tender him again next season. And then he's going to be due to be an unrestricted free agent after you hit him with the restricted free agency tender. And then at that point next season, like next off season, or no, not next offseason, but the offseason after next, then you give him the extension and you lock him up long term. And it's just kind of like the way that the free agency is structured, where it's like you don't need to pay him until 2 years from now. And so like, especially for the Chargers, who don't have a lot of money to begin with, like, why would you pay him a top of market extension or like a pretty decently sized extension before you have to. And like this happens a lot with kickers and punters and like just specialists in general, because a lot of those guys come in as UDFAs and everything. Like a lot of kickers, punters, whoever, like you'll see like they're on extremely cheap contracts and you're like, why are they on a vet minimum deal with no guaranteed when they're like the fifth best kicker in the league? And it's because they're on like an ERFA tender or an RFA tender. And so he's going to be on the Chargers next season. He's like, there's no question about that. He's not like it's not like restricted free agency in basketball where like you extend the tender to him and then teams are still able to negotiate with him. He's going to be on the Chargers next year. He's going to be on the Chargers the year after that. And he's probably going to be on the Chargers going forward unless something catastrophic happens, which it won't. Probably.
Yeah, because he's really good and Ryan Ficken's really good as well. Frank Blakely asking about Chidobe Awuzie. He was on the Bengals with a $7.25 million tag last season. Still with some injuries there, but Alex Insdorf, have you considered any potential fit there, or is that maybe a little bit too expensive for corner for you?
It's a little pricey, but like I'm kind of the mindset that the Chargers should spend on corner in this free agency. You know, not just limited to Chidobe, depending on where he goes, but I happen to like Darius Williams a lot, who just got cut, and you know, Joe Ortiz, he doesn't count against the comp pick formula, so there you go. And then honestly, you know, basing this off of his 2023 performance, I honestly don't mind Stephon Gilmore either, if the Chargers wanted to go in that direction. Even though he's a little bit older, he is 34. You know, still has, you know, maintained great performance the last 3 years since leaving New England. And the Chargers just kind of need an identity right now at outside corner with guys that fit the system. So for me, I think that any three of those guys are pretty decent choices. And I don't think you have to sign any of them to long-term deals. As Arjun says in the chat, Ronald Darby is a great fit too. Rocky Sin. I don't think you have to spend a bunch of money at corner in free agency, but I do think you at least need to get one guy who can play outside in the draft or prior to the draft.
I definitely agree. It's a must for the Chargers. Real quick, just flipping to back to the previous point, Justin Tucker joined the Ravens in 2012, did not get an actual extension until 2016, I believe, or 2017. So it took a while for them to, as Alex pointed out, like they cycle through the UDFA contract and the RFA contract. Then he got the franchise tag. Then he got an extension.
Yeah, we got to get Cameron Dicker some endorsements or something to make up the ground here. You know, we got to do right by our guy and vote for him to the Pro Bowl next year. Right now, saying that, get him to the Pro Bowl. Let's get to our first super chat here. Again, super chats appreciated. We'll ensure that your question gets answered. From Gary, not a free agency topic, but how would you feel about trading down in rounds 3 and 4 to maybe picks 15 to 20 in each round to get additional bodies in the draft? What are your thoughts there, Tyler?
I mean, not opposed overall. What that nets you is maybe like a next year day 3 pick or something. It's not like you're going to get another third rounder this year or next year for that. But no, I'm not opposed. And Joe Ortiz and the Ravens have certainly done that. Second round, third round, whatever. Like they'll trade at any point to make it work. So I'm not opposed. I think second round feels like a really good spot to trade down to, obviously at 5. But the second round, there's so many players. If they're like, hey, in the second round, we're taking a wide receiver, you can trade down because there's 34 other guys you could take at that spot.
Yeah, so the Chargers officially got their 8th pick courtesy of the Drew Tranquil contract. It's the 4th to last pick in the draft, I believe. So they have 8 picks to work with. I would like to see them get to 10. We'll see what kind of ways they go about doing that. If you trade down from 37 to like the late 40s, early 50s, you can net an additional top 100 pick traditionally. So that's kind of a more impactful trade down, but you know, Joe Ortiz is going to play the board there at the top of every round, which gives them some flexibility. Specifically in round 2 and round 4, you know, there's always these guys who kind of maybe slip through the cracks a little bit that teams kind of try and trade up for, like, you know, especially if like a quarterback that is there that people like. You know, I remember the Saints traded up for Jake Haener in the 4th round a couple years ago. So the Chargers are in a great spot to trade down in any round, but especially, you know, those beginning of the days round. So first round, second round, 4th round, I think it will suit them well. And I would expect Joe Ortiz to play the board that weekend for sure.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Garrick Norman wants to know, what about Gus Edwards and DeAndre Swift? Alex, your thoughts on the former Eagle?
I like DeAndre Swift. I think PFF's projection has him at like 6.25, which is, you know, a pretty reasonable price for him. He was pretty good last year. I don't think he is going to be as dynamic a runner as some of the guys at the top. And obviously he got the benefit of playing behind the Eagles line last year, which is very beneficial for running backs in the rehabilitation program.
Yeah.
But I do think there is still gas left in the tank there. Pretty good between the tackles as it was last year. So I'm not opposed to it. And I certainly favor paying $5 or $6 million for him as opposed to the running backs at the top. And then, like I said, I do think if you ultimately sign like a Gus Edwards or someone like that, that allows you a little bit more wiggle room to maybe go sign another running back if you want to, and you essentially get, you know, two running backs for less than the price of giving out a $10+ million contract to one of the guys at the top. So definitely not opposed to it.
Steven, you had a discussion on Twitter about, I think it was Singletary, and how everyone's like, well, he had this stats and these stats and whatever the last couple of years. But your point was like, it doesn't really fit what they might be doing with the Chargers, what Greg Roman might want to do. So what are the Chargers looking for in a running back this offseason?
Yeah, so in a gap and power scheme, you're looking for a runner who's very decisive and can make people miss in a phone booth. You're looking for somebody who, whether that's physicality or just, you know, lightning quick feet, but the vision and the decisiveness and the physicality are kind of like the traits that you're looking for. Swift has been, I would say, better classified as a zone runner, where you can kind of give him a longer runway out wide and in space, and then he can make a decision that way. He's not super decisive in a vacuum, and he's better suited in space. So I think he worked for the Eagles because you had the draw of the Jalen Hurts run game. You had obviously the offensive line. You had great tight end blockers. So I think it's probably a poor fit there too, unless like if you want Gus Edwards as well to do all the physical downhill stuff, that would make sense. But I think six-ish million combined is probably lowballing it. I'm not opposed to DeAndre Swift, and you could, you know, sign him to a $6 million contract, and then maybe you draft like a Braylon Allen or an Audric Estime to be your kind of your hammerhead. But I don't think you're investing that much money in the free agency running back position. You know, you could do like a Zach Moss and a J.K. Dobbins kind of deal. You're probably lowballing what these kind of guys are projecting. I think Gus Edwards is currently like $3.75 million, but to answer the question overall, like you're looking for a decisive physical runner who can get downhill in a hurry. And Gus Edwards obviously would fit that bill, but I don't think DeAndre Swift would, or Devin Singletary.
Yeah. I also think that Gus Edwards definitely kind of fits it. There are a lot of running backs who would fit that downhill run scheme. DeAndre Swift, probably not the most optimal fit there. I wouldn't be surprised if they went for one of the more Roman running back like fits in the free agent market. And then also in the draft, kind of get maybe like a Isaac Garendo, who, you know, operates out of a lot of those outside zone concepts that, you know, Roman happened to like in Baltimore. So I kind of think they could go in that direction in the draft too, maybe get more of your change of pace guy there, so to speak. So that wouldn't surprise me.
Somebody said Melvin Gordon in the chat. No, but I appreciate the joke.
Yeah, Jerry
or Jerry Tillery, who was cut today. Poor guy getting cut twice by Tom Telesco. That'd be funny. Super chat from Todd Miller wants to know, can they not backload these free agency contracts this year, given the cap room in 2025, without over leveraging there? So I think the thing with the cap, specifically about free agents, is it's easier to backload contracts when you are adding years to the contract. So that's why, like Josh Jacobs, I think you could do that. But if you're talking about a short-term free agent, that makes it a little bit more difficult to backload the contract.
Yeah, I also just don't see them signing many like 4-year deals in this free agency cycle.
Right.
Like they don't really have the ability to do that. They're going to be signing 1 to 3-year deals max, like in the case of the projected contract for Jacobs. So just don't really think there's an ability to do that. They can sort of probably do what they did with Kendricks last year, which was, hey, get a small year one cap hit and then a big year two. But I think that's it.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm curious how they structure contracts, because they had given out so much guaranteed money the last few years. I'm curious if that changes at all with the new regime. I know they still have some guys in place from the previous regime, so I don't know if that's a 1-year thing now or what, but curious how that goes. Katzen, while I have you here, just because I want to ask, did anyone, I don't know if this would have come up in any conversations you had, did anyone discuss the report or the rumor, I guess, that Henry to the Ravens was ever a thing? Did that ever come up?
Yeah, it came up a little bit while I was in Indianapolis. It wasn't really like a direct confirmation or denial of the rumor ever, but it mostly came up in like conversations that I had with people who are generally pretty plugged in, who were like, yeah, no, that just makes too much sense. There's no way that that's not happening. And so I think that that's kind of the league-wide expectation, is that he's going to be on the Ravens. But I don't know that it's necessarily because anyone has like heard anything, or just because like it makes way too much sense for everyone involved, and so everyone looking from the outside in is just like, oh yeah, well obviously.
Gotcha.
We were chatting about Ray Davis before the show started, and these running backs who are, you know, 23-24 years old. Katzen, where does Ray Davis fit for you in terms of like a potential Chargers fit and maybe some other day three running backs that you like?
Yeah, I think that he's a pretty decent fit for what the Chargers are going to be wanting to do on offense. Obviously, Kentucky ran a pretty like downhill running attack. Behind him, their offensive line was pretty good, and so like that was kind of like their identity this season. A lot of under center run, a lot of play action, a lot of stuff that you can see on film that translates well to like what the Chargers are going to be expected to do under Roman. For me, I think that Davis is probably going to land in that like 5th or 6th round range. He is a little bit older. This season was kind of like his best year after a couple of pedestrian years between like Temple and I think he was at Wake Forest before he got to Kentucky. And so he's a guy that I like. I really wish that he wasn't 24. He's a great story. He's a great kid by all accounts. You know, I'm a fan of his, and I hope that he does well in the league. I just don't know if that's going to be like for the Chargers necessarily, because again, with the rebuild and everything, like drafting a 24-year-old running back that's you're probably only going to get the rookie contract out of, like, I don't know that that's going to be like something that they are looking for. But again, it's a fifth round, sixth round pick, so like maybe they're fine with that, because at the end of the day, like, that's pretty good value for a day three pick. Some of the other guys I like in that range, though, Kamani Vidal, obviously from Troy, has been someone that like I think that all of us have talked about a ton. Yeah. He's one of my favorites. Tiny dude, but he's awesome. Garendo, although I don't know that he's gonna be like a day three guy anymore.
No, he's like a 10 on RES right now.
Yeah, and so I think he might sneak into the third round there, like get into kind of like the top end of the running back range. I think of who else. Yeah, those are my main guys. I mean, like Vidal is kind of like my like locked in day three pick. I love him. He's awesome.
Insdorf, I know Vidal has your stamp as well. Any day three guys that you like too?
Yeah, I'm big on Vidal, big on Ray Davis if it comes to that. I'm trying to think of others off the top of my head, but those are definitely like my top two, I guess, day three guys. And I think they make a ton of sense for what the Chargers are kind of looking for. I know the Chargers met with Vidal, I think, at both the Combine and the Senior Bowl. Is that true, Katzen?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. They met with Davis at the Combine as well, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they met with both of them. I think both of them are pretty good fits, especially if they get a decently big running back. Like, you know, the reports think they are, you know, maybe going to angle to get one of those bigger signings. Then I think day three, you get your change of pace back, more so than somebody like a Braylon Allen, who probably would project more for like a starting role. So I definitely think Vidal, Ray Davis, especially with how they're able to contribute both the running and the receiving game, make a lot of sense.
Insdorf, how high are you taking Blake Corum?
Oh, wow. I think in round six, he's not, you know, not a terrible fit, you know, if you can get him there. But if he's in round six and Ray Davis is there, I'm taking Ray Davis.
Oh, man.
Where do we fall on Blake Corum?
So I have him as a fourth round grade right now. You know, I think that's what the film and the testing dictates, but it's just like the injuries, the age, it makes it tough. And like Ray Davis and Garendo are older, but they don't have the injury histories and they don't have the tread, because Blake Corum's been getting, you know, 300 touches a year for 4 years. So it just, it makes it tough. Like, I know that there are Chargers fans and media members, like there's a good amount of the draft community that has him as RB1, which I think is a tad rich for me. But I also think like the sixth round is probably a tad too low. I think the film and the great and the combine testing would dictate like a fourth round pick for me. I would prefer other options that don't have the injury history and the age concerns.
Yeah, agreed.
I was just gonna say, like, I think that certainly towards the end of this college football season, like, he looked a little bit more like the Blake Corum of old, but still, like, the guy did go from like fourth in yards after contact to 77th. You know, I do think there are moments like that, and you see it on tape where he's just kind of a step slower. I think if they get, you know, a big name running back in free agency and you want him as your change of pace guy, like, I could eventually be sold into buying that. But, you know, I hope Harbaugh and Roman don't go into this with the expectation that, like, we're going to give Blake Corum like 200 carries a year. That would be kind of my hope, which, if they are making the free agent moves that, you know, we sort of think they're making, then, you know, I guess that kind of makes a little bit more sense. Round three for Corum, though, with the amount of needs that they have on the rest of this roster, especially defensively, like, that would be a little rich for me, especially if like Jalen Wright or somebody like that's still on the board.
Yeah, speaking my language there, Blake Corum is, I think, what, second on the consensus board? He might be third now, but yeah,
like, second round's that's a no-brainer. Like, no, you're not doing that in the second round with all their needs. Like, just no. Katzen, you're gonna
second on the consensus board over like Benson and Brooks and those
guys.
Yes,
there are a ton of draft community guys who have him as RB1. Like, it's after the way that he tested at the combine, it became a much more loud take. But there are a lot of people.
It became
out there
a much like, more loud take after 5 RAS. Like, what are we?
I got nothing for you, dude. I couldn't tell you why he's RB2. He's RB2. It is 73rd on the board, so it's not like he's projected top 30 or something. But he is, ahead of Benson and everybody else. Brooks is RB1 right now.
Katzen, you were going to jump in with a thought there too.
Oh yeah, I was just going to say, I mostly agree with like what you said, Steven. I think like fourth round is kind of where I'm comfortable with him, obviously with the injury history and everything else. But like, he did test pretty well. I think he actually hit like a 8-ish RAS, which I was a little bit surprised by. I do appreciate other Alex's commitment to the bit there. I think that that's really good. That's really funny. But yeah, I think fourth round is probably ultimately where I'm going to land. I don't see RB1, RB2. Like if you're talking about a fourth round pick, I think it's going to be like RB7. Like there's a lot of guys that are going to go in that like third to fourth round range. And I think it's just going to depend on like what teams are, you know, what specific teams are looking for. I think like Brooks, Benson, like Marshawn Lloyd is going to be up there. Jalen Wright will be up there. Braylon Allen will be up there despite like not testing at the combine and everything, just because he's so young and he's like not got a ton of tread on the tires. Like
large,
a lot of guys that are going to be up there. And so I think that that is going to contribute a little bit to pushing Corum down as well. But yeah, I think like fourth round is like where I'd be comfortable with him. And for the Chargers, like being at the top of the fourth, I'm like, if they're going to do that, I kind of would prefer, like we talked about earlier, like them trading down in the fourth, if they're going to do that, and taking it more towards like the middle of the fourth, later in the fourth. But that's kind of where I fall on him as well.
I'm curious, Katzen, where you think Bucky Irving goes after the combine that he had. Because, I mean, me and Steven were both pretty high on him. And now it's like, you know, that testing was not quite what we expected. But, you know, if he's still there in like round five or round six, certainly wouldn't hate it. But what is kind of the expectation there?
Yeah, I think that the kind of sense that I've gotten is that he'll be in like the fourth or fifth round. I think he'll be in kind of that like second tier of guys that get mixed in the draft. I think that his testing was definitely subpar and it was under what people were expecting, but I don't think it was like necessarily that far under what I was expecting. Like, you know, like he looks like a pretty decent athlete on tape, but he doesn't look like a like outstanding athlete by any means. So I wasn't expecting like, you know, eye popping numbers from him or anything. I think that the biggest thing for him still is just going to be that he's under 200 pounds. And like typically the NFL does not really enjoy running backs that are that small. There's been a little bit of a shift of it this, you know, this past year with like Devon Achane and Keaton Mitchell, but like Mitchell was a UDFA and then also got injured. Achane got injured twice. And so like I don't think that those players are necessarily going to change the NFL team's mind about like players that are that big. And so I think like fourth, fifth round range for him is going to be like where I ultimately land. I think he's going to be kind of like in that run that I think will get kicked off by a Corum or someone like that, kind of in the fourth, that starts kind of a miniature run on running backs, kind of in that range.
Yeah. Just to circle back to Blake Corum thing, I think the RAS was really boosted after the agility grades and the bench press in particular. So he put up 27 reps on the bench press, which is 98th percentile among running backs. And then he short shuttled 4.12, which is 90th percentile. And then three cones, 6.02, which is 95th percentile. So if you
he
just
got 5.8 like before that stuff got added. So I'm going to run with that.
I'm just saying the context there definitely matters there. All right, well, we'll move on to the next one here from Demetrius. How would you guys attack trying to pair someone with Thule on the other side for the future through free agency or the draft? Tyler, we haven't done our edge rusher episode yet. The expectation is still obviously that it sounds like the expectation, I should say, is that they move on from one of Joey or Khalil. Mm-hmm. So for you, how would you address the edge rusher position long term, as Demetrius is asking?
Yeah, I think it's too early to take an edge rusher early this year. If they still have Mack, if they still have Thule, there's your 1-2. I think Ortiz, they do the veteran free agent type. I'm not saying they have to go get Van Noy and Clowney specifically, but that worked for him last year. I think they do something like that. And then next year, should the opportunity present itself and Mack is going to be gone, that's probably just your round one target. You're going to take an edge rusher early. You should take edge rushers early. So I think you find a good third guy this year, assuming you move on from one of these, one of Joey or Khalil. And the next year you invest pretty early.
Alex's, any other thoughts there?
Yeah, I think the way you probably go about it depends on what you do with Bosa and Mac this year, obviously. If you were to trade one of them and then you keep, let's say, trade Mac and then keep Bosa this year, which is kind of what like I outlined this morning, then I think in that situation, you could probably get off of Bosa next year. You can even do a restructure and free up some money that way if they wanted to do that. So I think then you probably move off of both Mac and Bosa by next year. And then, yeah, like Tyler said, I just think, unfortunately, you know, I do think there's like some good edges in this class, but they just have too many other needs and are drafting, frankly, a little too high right now, unless they, you know, trade back significantly to like really take edge in the first round. So yeah, definitely kind of a next year long-term like plan here. But still think, yeah, in free agency, there's some great options and they can go that route too.
Yeah, agreed with everything there. I think that regardless of what order it happens in, Mac and Bosa are not going to be on the team in 2025. And so, you know, like regardless of what order that happens in, obviously one of them is not going to be on the team in 2024, but you're going to have one of them plus Thule as the 1-2 this season, like Tyler mentioned. I think they'd probably sign a 3 for like a pretty cheap deal in free agency. You still have, you know, some of the young guys that they cycled in this year under contract for next season to kind of like add depth. And then like attacking it more aggressively in the draft next year, whether that's like the round one pick or like another like round two pick like Thule was, to then replace the second of those big two guys that are going to be exiting the team after next season. I think that that makes the most sense from a long-term perspective. But yeah.
Yeah, I think the only real scenario where I could see the Chargers being like aggressive at edge early in the draft would be, you know, you trade down to 11 and then somebody comes to you again with like another package, you know, you trade down twice to like 15, 16, 17 and Jared Verse or Dallas Turner, Yatu Latu are still there and they're like very clearly the best players on the board. So I think it would have to be a bit like, I really like Jared Verse and he would be a pretty natural replacement for Khalil Mack. But I'm probably not comfortable taking him until, you know, like 12 or so after that, given the cornerbacks that I think are higher than him, Terron Arnold, and I'm not 100% sold on Quinion Mitchell, but I'm not taking Verse over Arnold for sure. And depending on the wide receiver board too. So I think there's like a slight chance, but I would tend to agree with what has been said in terms of probably attacking that position more aggressively next year. I see you answered this in the chat, Tyler, but any thoughts from the other three about Muhammad Kamara from Colorado State, correct?
Yeah. He's fun. I really like him. I got a chance to see him live at the Shrine Bowl. Really stood out there. I think was probably the best edge rusher that was down there in Frisco. The thing for him is just going to be that like he is small, 6'1" 248, yeah. Like sub 33 inch arms, 78 and a half wingspan. So teams are typically not like super high on guys like that. Again, it kind of goes back to that conversation that we were having about Bucky Irving. And so like body type wise, it's going to be a process with him, I think. I don't necessarily think that he's like a bad run defender on tape, but like you're always concerned with guys that are that size, like how they're going to run defend in the NFL. That's going to be a point of emphasis for the Chargers. And so I like him. I think he's going to be a pretty decent NFL player. I just don't necessarily know if that's going to be for the Chargers.
I fall too.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I haven't gotten much of a chance to watch him yet. Like if I'll tease my mock draft a little bit, but smaller edge that I kind of like a little bit more later in the draft. I do like Khalid Duke out of Kansas State. A lot, and I know Katzen's a kind of big fan of him too. But I definitely think there's room in general for like a 5th to 7th round like flyer, even if they're not going to probably be addressing edge particularly early in this draft.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, guys, we'll take questions for a few more minutes here. We'll do some fast ones. I guess this is the time of the show where you ask a food question if you want.
Of course, gotta get the food question
or whatever. But we'll do some rapid ones, and then we'll head out for the day. Wanted to circle back here from Anthony Hopper. Thoughts on Devin White and or Julian Blackmon?
I have no thoughts.
Devin White is going to cost a lot of money for the player that he is because of what his name is.
And because he was a first round pick. And he's not. Wasn't he benched by the Bucks?
Yes. He got benched for a UDFA this season.
Yeah.
Oh.
But he's fast.
Julian Blackman is sick, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Love Julian Blackman. Probably going to cost too much money for the Chargers.
Yeah. Julian Blackman, obviously another Utah guy. So I was letting somebody else talk about him first. He played a lot of slot for Gus Bradley this past year. So there's a lot of flexibility there. He was all Pac-12 as a corner and then all Pac-12 as a safety. So he could do a lot of different roles for you, depending on like what kind of needs you have. I actually do think he would be a pretty good fit for the Chargers. Him and Derwin can kind of just like change places all over the place, and you wouldn't necessarily lose a lot. There is an injury history there. A lot of the Utah guys, unfortunately, get injured a lot in the NFL because I don't know why. It sucks, but definitely not opposed. I think he's projected by Brad as like a $6 million per year candidate right now, if I believe, but there's a ton of quality safeties this year in terms of veteran options for the Chargers. All right.
Cool.
Yeah. Joseph Rodriguez, if you could pick just one Wolverine, who would it be and where? I think for me, it's Junior Colson. I think the hype for him right now is kind of like in the 50 range. So I don't know if he'll make it to the third round, but that would be – that would be awesome. I think Junior Colson is the perfect, you know, like linebacker in this system. Obviously, he played very well in it. So him in the third round would be my ideal scenario, but I don't know how realistic it is that he makes it to pick number 69.
Yeah, that's what I'm praying for. So just looking at the mock consensus board, there's 18 players from Michigan projected in about the top 300 or so. So yeah, good group for sure. Colson would have been my pick. I don't feel like I have to go get Jenkins in the second round. Sain Ristil, that's up to them to answer that question based on what Derwin's going to do. We feel a certain way about Corum. Steven, honestly, I like Trent Jones, the tackle from Michigan, who played like,
oh yeah,
we started like three games. And we joke about this every year at this point, and we just made the joke the last episode that we never like the Michigan offensive tackles because they're always guards and they don't do well. Yeah. He might also be a guard, but I actually finally, for the first time in my life, watched a Michigan tackle and thought, "Eh, it's not bad."
All right, there we go.
The Harbaugh effect.
The Harbaugh effect.
yeah.
Mattson or Insdorf, if you want to answer that one.
I think for me, I've thought Junior Colson throughout the whole process. Like Tyler said, Sain Ristil, I think, is the best like possible player, I think, in that range that they could take. But it comes down to, do they want Derwin playing the slot? Do they not want him playing the slot? And then I think if they don't, then I think that becomes a much more possible option, but also kind of depends on what they do in free agency, because Sain Ristil is probably still a slot only guy and you still don't really have like a true outside, like bona fide midger corner. So I think that's a little bit of an interesting fit depending on how they decide to fill corner like throughout free agency and the draft. I would say Sain Ristil is probably the best player that I would, you know, like out of Michigan, but I would also say the like smarter pick in terms of fit is probably Colson.
Yeah, Colson's my pick too, but like obviously Colson, Sain Ristil, like guys that you touched on. I do want to mention like AJ Barner, the tight end, is another one who I like quite a bit. He's going to be a day three pick, probably like 4, 5, 6 range. But as like a tight end two, is just going to be asked to block, was basically what he was asked to do at Michigan. I think he fits pretty well. And then Cornelius Johnson, the receiver, is a player that I like a lot. I don't know that he's going to be a great fit for the Chargers because I think that Michigan didn't really like use him properly. And I talked to him at the Shrine Bowl and like I asked him, you know, about like, hey, like you're doing a lot of like different stuff than you did at Michigan. Like, what's the deal with that? And he gave a very diplomatic answer, but it was kind of like, I think that he kind of feels that way too a little bit. And so like, I don't know that that's going to be like a great Chargers fit, but he is a player that I like a lot, like in the fourth or fifth round as kind of like a discount wide receiver option.
Yeah, his testing was like identical to Nico Collins too, like measurements, everything. So
yeah, that's a confidence been floating around too, is just like a guy that could like, you know, get to year two or three and then just like blow up because like a team is using him correctly.
Yeah. I guess Mel Kiper and Field Yates set the over-under for the Chargers drafting Michigan players at 2.5. I'm taking the under. I don't think it'll be that many. Like, I could see two. Like, I could see Colson in round three and AJ Barner like later on, but people are getting a little crazy, I think, with like the Michigan stuff. Like, I don't think he's just going to take all the Michigan defensive players and say, come back to play with me again.
Well, of course, the draft is going to start with JJ McCarthy at five. I mean, you know, with how much Harbaugh's talked about him, obviously. So
let's hope so. Obviously, not to the Chargers, but that'd be great.
Yeah, agreed. I'm going to take the under there. I think that it's been overstated for sure. Like, there are enough people in the front office. And this is something that I think we've talked about before, but like Joe Hertz was a pretty well thought of GM candidate. Like, you don't take this job if you're just going to like defer your entire like responsibilities to Harbaugh and what the Michigan staff wants. Yeah. And so like, I'm going to take the under there. I'm going to trust that, like, you know, there's going to be scouting process that goes on. I do think that like, if there's a tie and people are split on a pick, that they're going to lean towards a Michigan guy, like if he's in consideration. But I do think that like, if there's some of these guys that like hit UDFA range, that like they'll probably end up Chargers.
Yeah.
But those aren't going to be players that are drafted. So I'm going to take the under on 2.5.
I would also take the under.
Yeah. Interesting super chat question here from Todd. Big if Marvin is on the board at five, is there a realistic trade package that you would accept? And how far down, what would the package be? Kind of question here.
I'd have to consider who's trading realistic. Up, I guess.
Consult the trade pick chart, Tyler.
Okay, well, let's say it is kind of the same out of the top 10. So you get someone second this year and maybe another pick next year. It's not for a quarterback if they're trading up for Marvin Harrison Jr. So let's say you get a second this year and some other pick next year.
I'm not trading out of that.
No, So theoretically, this would be like quarterbacks go 1-4, obviously, or Connor Rogers thinks that the Cardinals could take Joe Alt, which would be hilarious to me. But
I approve.
So those are the two scenarios. If Marvin Harrison Jr. is on the board at five, if he's there, I'm not trading down. I'm taking him. Like, I think he's the best player in the draft. Like, you'd have to offer me like at minimum a first round pick next year for me to even consider moving on. Or moving away from drafting Marvin Harrison Jr., I think.
Yeah, I think that if you're going to trade off of that pick, it has to be for a package that is essentially a quarterback package.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was just looking at what the Julio Jones trade was, and that was 2 1s, like a swap to get to 27-6, but also a future one, a 2 and 2 4s. But that was also to move down 21 picks.
Yeah.
And so, but I think that that's kind of the framework that you'd be working off of, is like a 1 next year, probably getting a 2 from someone, and then like a day 3 pick either this year or a future year, which at that point is basically a quarterback package. And so I think that that would have to be what it is in order to move off of something like that. Now, I am not the GM of the Chargers, unfortunately. So I think that like, if this scenario does happen, I think that there is probably a realistic package that they accept that is less than that, because of what they're trying to build and everything. But me personally, like, it has to be a 1 this year, like, you know, moving down, a 1 next year, probably a 2 this year and a day 3 pick next year.
And yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, I don't think Marv's going to be there anyway. I think he's probably going to the Cardinals or Patriots.
Yeah.
It really depends on, I guess, how differently they have Marv versus Neighbors versus Odunze graded. Like, if they have Marv a decent tier above those guys, then like, yeah, on, you know, kind of, I don't think you trade out of that. But if you can like get back to, you know, that 9 range, and maybe you wind up with whoever is left between Neighbors or Odunze, and you don't have them graded that differently, or like certain sections of Chargers Twitter, you just think Marv is an overrated Nepo baby, then in that instance, okay, fine, you can trade back. But I think Marv is the best receiver in this draft, as Steven just said, and I would just be kind of devastated if they, you know, traded out of
yeah
the best possible, you know, receiver that they could have gotten in any of the last five drafts and did it because their roster was poorly constructed before and they felt the need to do that. But I also don't think that would be the case. I think if they traded out of that pick, then they would feel pretty comfortable with whatever wide receiver they would take in the first round, or they would be comfortable with the depth of the class, and maybe there's some type of resolution that they can get on Mike Williams or something like that too.
Yeah, man, I would have such a tough time on draft night if Marvin Harrison Jr. is on the board at five and they did not take him. That would be not fun for me. but we'll see how it goes. All right, guys, this has been awesome. I appreciate Alex and Alex for jumping on here. The floor is yours for any final free agency take before we jump out of here. So, Alex Inzerf, we'll start with you. Final free agency take before we get to the opening of the new league year next week is what?
Please don't spend $10 million on a running back.
spend $9 million. Just saying.
I don't know if that's the smartest thing either. You know, I just think going into free agency, the goal should be filling out some of these roster spots that, you know, you just don't want barren going into the draft. You know, particularly center sticks out to me, corner sticks out to me as, you know, some of those positions, even linebacker. So I think definitely you should be going kind of for more of the bargain bin value and maybe some of those tier two, three, four free agents than some of the tier one guys. That would certainly drive more buzz on Chargers Twitter, but I definitely think the smarter thing is to kind of play the value game in free agency. So yeah, I think that's kind of my thing going into this week is spend smart, not more in this case, especially considering the contract situations that the Chargers are in. I do want to say whatever happens this week, love Mike Williams and everything he's done as a Charger has been awesome. So, you know, I hope they figure out, you know, some resolution there that kind of works out for both sides. But he's been an awesome Charger to watch.
Yeah, I see Tyler pulling it up. I'm glad we stayed on here for a minute because Deanna Rossini just tweeted out that the Chargers are open to trade offers for many veteran players, including Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, per her sources. There are teams interested, but many around the league are willing to wait to see if the Chargers cut them soon. Katzen, any takes there?
I mean, to be expected, pretty much. Like, I don't think that that's excuse me. I don't think that that's really like a surprise by any means. Obviously, I still think that it's more likely that Khalil is back than Joey, but if you're getting a better trade offer for Khalil than you are for, like, if you're going to get something substantive back for Khalil, then like, it's probably, you know, a decent move to trade him and keep Joey. You know, but I don't think that's a surprise really. Like, many veteran players, I would assume, means Khalil, Joey, Mike, end of list. You know, so it is what it is. I don't think it's necessarily like a huge surprise. I do think that like the team's willing to be patient and see if they just end up getting cut kind of lines up with everything that we've talked about all offseason as well. Where like, hey, like, you have to get cap compliant by Wednesday. Like, there's a time limit on on this. Like, we can just wait this out because you have to get rid of one of them. Like, you can't keep all three of these players going into Wednesday. One of them is going to be off the team. And so I think that there, if there is a trade that gets done, it's going to be either that like a team gets wind that like the Chargers are planning on keeping the guy that they want, whether that's Khalil or Mike or whoever it is. And they're like, hey, no, like, give him to us. Or they get the sense that like they're not going to be players in that market if the player hits free agency, right? Where like if Joey hits free agency and it's, you know, whoever it may be, and then they're like, oh, like, we're not going to be like in the market for him as a free agent, so we have to trade for him if we want him. And so, you know, I think it doesn't change a ton for me. I think it's still pretty much like what we expected. It's going to be business as usual. I'm interested to see if they get back anything, and if so, what it is. But yeah, I think to be expected.
Tyler, you were going to jump in there?
No, I think Alex said it perfectly, so I'm good there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, with the Joey and Khalil stuff, kind of like Katzen said, I don't think that they're going to have a ton of leverage. And this is something I think Brad wrote about a few weeks ago in PFF when he kind of projected like a 2025 fourth, you know, potentially for Khalil Mack in a trade back. And it's just like, I don't think the Chargers have a ton of leverage to be able to exercise some of these trades. I'm sure they would love to trade Khalil Mack or Joey Bosa. It's just, does it come to fruition? I will float the San Francisco scenario only because, you know, I mean, Popper talked about it, but also they are a team that just got armed with three comp picks yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the Chargers and Joey decided, hey, look, you know, it's time to part ways, that I think is like the one route that seems the most convincing for Joey Bosa. And then I think either way, depending on how they split the Bosa Mac thing, you're probably talking about some of those like Detroit, San Francisco, you know, playoff contenders that are trying to beef up their pass rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was listening to all of the free agency podcasts this week, and all of them talked about the 49ers maybe making a big play for some defensive free agent to kind of, you know, get back to their previous form. So I wouldn't rule that out. I think to me, there are a lot of people debate like who has more value, Joey or Khalil. I still think it would be Khalil just because Joey has all of the injuries. He has another year on his contract that's still relatively expensive. So I just don't know, like Alex Insorf said, like how much value there is in either of them. So my expectation is that Mike Williams is cut. I think especially after the Jerry Jeudy trade where the Broncos get a fifth and a sixth round pick, like nobody's really going to trade for Mike Williams coming off of that ACL injury. So I would expect him to get cut and one of the edge rushers to get traded. We'll see kind of how that unfolds, but technically speaking, they could cut Mike Williams, make another extension, restructure, and hold on to the edge rushers, but we'll see what happens there. But either way, this team is going to look very different. Like Alex Insorf said, Mike Williams, Joey Bosa, Austin Eckler, all these guys have been, you know, pillars of the franchise for the last 6, 7, 8 years. So it's going to be a lot of big changes on this team, and we're going to have all of it covered. Alex, we appreciate you guys for jumping on. Thanks to Tyler, as always. Thanks to you guys for all of the great questions, all the great super chats. That's going to do it for us today. We'll see you next time. As always, bolt up.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.